this show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So we're at the dark of the moon, pre-solstice, astro-mytho-council. It's the positive intrigue of now. Remember, the great utopian Fourier said, in any ideal community, we must allow for the passion for intrigue, because when people conspire to do something good, it draws upon more elegant parts of our psyche. So here we are. Dark of the Moon is traditionally when people gather to guide and determine the course of culture. So let's do that. Saturn is stationing now at the degree of calling in a new tide of cultural energy. So before I bring in our splendid astrological colleague guest in a few moments, first, the summer solstice, right? Our dedicated blessings form our vessel. I remain in love with the idea that the word vessel in all languages means container, alchemical vessel, and also boat, which is also craft, right? So we our dedicated blessings form our vessel, our alchemical vessel, in which we also set sail for this summer solstice. So summer solstice, dreaming with the earth on behalf of flora, fauna, fungi, convening by Zoom on June 20th, Tuesday, at 3 p.m. West Coast time, 6 p.m. East Coast time, the sun quintiles Chiron. So the lineage of mentors are attending and backing us up. Saturn quintiles Uranus now and then, so our dedication is our freedom. It's open to all by donation, coyotenetworknews.com. The link is up. More copy will be up in a half hour. Metaphor and music are the incarnational garb whereby power enters the world to animate the Earth's community guiding story. Think, you know, for 25,000 years, human gather at the solstices, and what's going on there, the first forms of symbolic, effective magic. O literal and symbolic light of sun, come on in and illuminate this writing, this painting at the back of the cave that we don't usually see. This is the guiding community story we want to make true, right? So it will be, again, Tuesday with me inviting liberating trickster and word crafting. Linguistic precision guides the vision. And colleague Sean Patrick O'Donohue inviting Celtic plant lore and inviting in plant allies. We need all the help we can get. St. John's wort, he loves the solstice. Mugwort for boundaries and dreaming, safe enough to dream. Devil's Club for protecting what's important. Calamus for speaking the truth. Lavender and psilocybe go into our atmospheric mist. So it's me, Sean Patrick O'Donohue, and Emma Kayla Gaston, Orisha songstress with the music to conjure the mojo that our dedications incarnate into sensual actuality, calling in Big Mama, Yemaya, Oya, Obatala. Again, 3 p.m. West Coast time, 6 p.m. East Coast time, coyotenetworknews.com for more info. So here we are. We are welcoming fellow astrological guide Eric Myers at this time when humans gather to cooperate with nature's guiding genius to direct, cahoot, participate in the course of culture. Our first task, of course, is redesigning the human cultural interface with flora, fauna, fungi, and many other things that we will get to. The plot thickens with positive intrigue. I love Richard Farina's quote, take the zircon to Fapa and tell him we move tonight. So Eric Myers is a dedicated full-time astrologer, author of 7 books, including The Spiritual Dimension of the Beatles. Yes, we're going to resonate with that. The Astrology of Awakening, Volume 1 and 2, Elements and Evolution, and Uranus, the Constant of Change. He has an MA in Transpersonal Counseling Psychology from Naropa University and studied with astrological colleague Stephen Forrest. His website is soulvisionconsulting.com. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you, Caroline. It is such a joy and honor to spend some time with you.
Yes, this is good. Some genius is scheduling us. So as I mentioned kind of backstage, I go, well, every Thursday night is the night of Mushkil Gusha, the remover of all difficulties, right? Very Jupiter, very Ganesh. If we tell a heartening tale, we're aspiring, and or give a gift in the name of Mushkil Gusha, then the people who are in real need will always find their way. And in that Sufi folktale, it's like, you know, it's important to tell the tale every Thursday. But as is the way of men, we forget. But now we remember. All right. So and then I'll toss it back to you in a moment, Eric. So Jupiter, Ganesh, sextiles, stationing Saturn on Father's Day, on the new moon. That's very witty. And it really says whatever our dedicated craft, Jupiter says, I will fill it. So I love being able to cahoot, as you know, Eric. Show's been on a while, and sometimes on rare occasions we have a fellow astrologer with whom we can just fully unfurl. I don't always completely mention astrology if there's a particularly innocent grown-up guest, but here we are, we get to unfurl. So outer planets, I guess I'll just do this little thing here. I love astrology as exquisite language of our interior psyche, separated by a thin membrane we call identity from the whole pulsing biological and cultural conversation. So I'd mentioned to you, I like thinking of the 1960s, 1966, 68, I mean, all of those times, the Uranus-Pluto conjunction as a positive sleeper cell now being brought alive, in which everybody born in the 60s or who lived through the 60s or in any way was culturally influenced by the 60s, it's all stirring now, going, wait a minute, didn't we come to do something? We did. So here's your book on the Beatles. Can you tell us about that?
Well, gosh, sure. I mean, the Uranus-Pluto conjunction turned out to be the star of the book. And the whole entire book was written, you know, from the Beatles' trajectory, which using a 10-degree orb was beginning to apply in 1961, right when Brian Epstein signed them. And then the Beatles ended up breaking up in 1970, right when 10 degrees separating. So that whole conjunction, lasting for about 9 years, literally shows the rise, peak, and descent of the Beatles. And as I mentioned in the book, they perhaps are the most emblematic example of that interface. And they wrote all this music and all these lyrics that basically describe it. So my book turned it out being about the Uranus-Pluto conjunction through these characters called the Beatles. And I'll just mention that, you know, I'm looking at the current astrology, and right now we've got Uranus applying to trine Pluto, and this is another kind of station point that was begun in the 60s. So a lot of it just goes back to that seed time, and it's amazing because we only have a Uranus-Pluto conjunction like once every 125 years. So it really is the shaping kind of energies for a long time. So I love talking about it, and the Beatles are so emblematic of it. So yes, let's talk Beatles, if you will.
Yeah, no. So you set me forth, because as I mentioned again backstage, so I, as a young early teen, remember. Well, May 26, 1967 is when Sgt. Pepper was released in England, and June 2nd, 1967 was when it was released in the U.S., and we go, ooh. So it was the Uranus-Pluto conjunction. We'll unpack this and translate it into available language here. But the Uranus-Pluto conjunction trining John Lennon's Saturn-Jupiter conjunction, you know, when... As it's unleashed, and that's an interesting theme. These big patterns, right, that are available to everybody, not everybody lives them. Some step up and are the thing, right? And I'd mentioned that, you know, I remember on June 2nd, 1967, when Sgt. Pepper was released, and all the neighborhood kids, including myself, we all gathered. We didn't even know each other, to listen in reverence, because it was so important, that outer cultural expression of an inner collective dream, right? Is that what you think of?
Yeah, well, I was actually born in 1971, so I did not get to experience when it first came out. But I will say this. my parents had the album, and I kind of took to it as a very young child. And I listened to Sgt. Pepper constantly. I'm talking from the age 4 or 5, you know, onwards. And it became probably the most defining influence of my early childhood. And I didn't understand that until 40 years later when I was writing the book and I researched all the astrology. And it brought me back to the 70s when I was listening to that. And it was kind of like this incredible homecoming into myself. So even though I wasn't alive, I very much resonate with that album as a very formative influence.
Right. And then because you set me on this path, you know, John Lennon, born October 9th, 1940, another Libran dragon like myself, at 6:30 p.m. in Liverpool. And it was on his birthday, October 9th, 1965, that was the first Uranus-Pluto conjunction. Isn't that adorable? It was at 17 Virgo 10 minutes, whose image is the Ouija board. And then there were two more exact Uranus-Plutos, but it was on his birthday, mm-hmm. right? As though really tapping him on the shoulder, going, you are part of this large thing.
Yes, exactly. And at that time, they gathered in the studio to record Rubber Soul. And that became one of the first really progressive rock albums that was so influential for future music, right when the first conjunction. And then the second conjunction was in April of 66, when they were recording Tomorrow Never Knows, which is a wild song that really kind of captures not only musically, but also lyrically, a lot of what that conjunction really is about.
Oh, that's great. And due to most skookum wonderful board up, our break music will be Tomorrow Never Knows, right? So isn't that fun? it's a great, perfect. It's very good for now. These things are all humming. And it's how I like to think of all of us, you know, when we do an astrology reading, to say, you know, the outer planets, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, represent huge intelligences of nature and keepers of the whole big conversation. So when they dance with any of us, and really in a sense all of us, they're tapping us on the shoulder going, oh, fill in your name, you're part of a big thing. This humming, mm-hmm. this vibration, this resonance, and it certainly goes back to, yes, 1965, 1966, and the wide thing. Right, and Tomorrow Never Knows, we will hear it at break music, but it's very now, right? I mean, it's very Neptune, turn off your mind, relax and float downstream. It is not dying. It's not dying. And John Lennon had a son, quintile Pluto, again, irresistible eloquence in bringing forth, you know, diving into the underworld and then, you know, challenging fate and all. But, yeah, so it's an iconic song, as so much of it is. And yeah, Rubber Soul, when you mention that, it's like I used to go to sleep every night playing that on my little record player. These are, you know, in us, and as you say, you know, born later or whatever, it's humming, and we get to, you know, call upon whatever we need now. And so how do you, well, can you say a little more, excuse me, just about, you know, Lennon and the Beatles? You spent 5 years writing this wonderful book, yeah?
Yeah, well, first I do want to comment. You mentioned Sun Quintile Pluto. As I note in the book, that is the tightest aspect in his entire chart. And I discuss it about shaping culture. Pluto in Leo, quintile his son in Libra, of really being this brilliant shaper of cultural trends is the way that I talk about that. And I love that you mentioned the quintile in the little intro as well, because a lot of astrologers do not look at the quintile, and I do, and I think it's incredible, and it really is just this amazing aspect of brilliance. So I'm glad that you are giving some focus on it. So to answer your question, Lennon, yeah, well, gosh, there's so many directions we can go with him. You know, I'll just say something personally about him that I admire most. He's got Mars in Libra on his north node in Libra. And he just was this warrior figure to me for peace and for the arts and for really using Libran things as you know, this warrior figure. He had a message. He had something he was advocating, and he wasn't shy about it. And I've got Mars on my north node as well, similar to him. And he really has been, since a very young age, my greatest inspiration to just go for it, be martial. Not everyone's going to like you. It doesn't matter. But believe in yourself and just go for it.
That's great. And as I mentioned, his Mars at 2 plus Libra, that's the exact same degree as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders Mercury. They have the same Mercury team. That's why she so gladdens and lightens his heart. And there's John Lennon. John Lennon, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and Bernie Sanders. And the image for that degree is Dawn of a New Day Reveals Everything Changed. And it trines John Lennon's moon overhead at 3 plus Aquarius, which is restoring a lost condition of spirituality to the public, right? And we go, he did that. And I think we look at, you know, just the language of astrology so infinite and the Greeks gloomy and grumpy, but they did say that the moon overhead, the moon is the people. And when you're born with the moon overhead, you are, as the moon waxes and wanes, so does public response. You are tapped into collective public response. So that works.
That works well. I mean, also in Aquarius up there as well. It also makes me think, I believe Michael Jackson had his moon in the 10th house, and he certainly is another character who qualifies in that way.
Yeah, and then let's come back to these aspects and whatnot too, but then the moon has a quincunx, the moon in Aquarius, to Venus in Virgo. Venus, craft, art, love, Virgo, language crafting. So language crafting of deep things spiraled into accessible musical and linguistic vernacular into the collective. Mm. And we go, well done, lad. I do miss him. You know, I remember when he was assassinated. And that's also maybe a Pluto thing in hindsight, out of the public. But yes, what a character. And then thank you for noticing the quintile. So I've been in love with quintiles, you know, and now even more so. Just to explain, we look at all angles in astrology as divisions of the circle by numbers, like so a 90-degree angle division of the circle by 4. A quintile is a division of the circle by 5. 5 times 72 is 360. 5 is sacred to Venus. Venus forms a 5-petaled orbital design over 8 years. And so the way I learned it as a little tiny astrology student in London on Baker Street was we learned it as irresistible eloquence. And so we would read authors, and then if they had this just compelling magnetic eloquence, we would then guess if they had this, you know, pretty rare thing, because the way I learned it, it's got to be within 2 degrees to count, you know, and then go, oh, they did, right? So kind of scientific. And then the way I've come to love it, and it can be used for ill. I'm always disappointed to see people who do terrible things with quintiles going, what are you doing with that? But the reason I love it is I think it's the capacity, and Lennon had this, to have a vision and to be like a tuning fork in that it hums in others. So it's really democratically clean, because it doesn't require persuading. It's like, oh, since I heard that song, since I listened to that thing, since my gaze was guided that way, I see that now, or I feel that now. So it's really clean because it's guiding people to their own autonomy, which, I mean, we're all befoibled, but we'd say that was, you know, a good part of John Lennon's dedication. And then I love my astrological colleague of 40 years, Sylvia Hanley, said, Caroline, the quintile is that, but it's also the capacity to open portals between worlds and between dimensions. And I'm going, all right, now we're talking. And if it's not true, let's make it true. But does that amuse you also when you think of John Lennon, part of all of us in a way, with it's Chiron and Pluto, you know, Quintile, his son, open portals between worlds? Well, music does that, right?
Yes, it does. Well, I'll also say that most things that you say amuse me, and I get a kick out of all of it, so thank you. And absolutely it does. And, you know, as I'm listening to you talk, I'm thinking about it. I'm like, you know, the Quintile also kind of challenges things in some ways, and just to even find it astrologically requires us to be a little bit challenged because it's not so neatly seen because it's 72 degrees. So you kind of got to kind of do a little math if you're going to locate it by eye. And so a lot of people ignore it and it's more marginalized. But, you know, when we do apply the effort and we're able to claim our quintiles, there's a lot of juice and exciting, very compelling aptitude with the quintile. But we got to claim it and we got to stretch ourselves. And so I like that it's not so easily detected.
Except we are grateful for computers. Right. And it's like everything is imprisoning and liberating, right? Computers. I had one of the first computers like ever in order to do astrology charts in 1978. And I noticed right then, because I'd been doing everything by hand before then, is that you lose some things, the careful kind of monastic, simple but complex calculation. And you would notice, for instance, how fast Mercury was moving that day, right? And now with computers, we don't do that. But we do gain some things, too, the quintiles. And I was asking my great friend, colleague, Sylvia Hanley, you know, but there are so many people who've done terrible, terrible things with quintiles, and she's good at bringing up the kind of gloomier cautionary tales. I'm like, oh, all right, the shadow of the thing. And I go, you know, why is that? And she goes, well, it opens portals between worlds, you know. And you know, it can be bad too. But we...
Well, I mean, everything in astrology, in my view, has a bright and dark side. I mean, everything responds to the quality of consciousness that we bring to it.
Right.
So, we can just, you know, share that with any of the aspects or planets or signs or what have you. So sure, you know, they're going to reflect our consciousness and our intentions.
Right. But I'm also, but I yeah, exactly. And it is a mystery, isn't it? Like, you know, if young Donald Trump or Hitler or whatever came to you for a reading, you know, a long time ago, not knowing anything, we wonder what we would have said. You know, maybe more painting, Adolf. Maybe painting's really the way to go. You know, I've very rarely been doing a reading where I actually got creeped out by somebody's chart, which is where you're feeling what is animating the thing. But mostly, I'm rooting for everybody. Right. I mean, do you sometimes wonder, like, you know, look at charts afresh and go, now how could this sketchy thing have gone? What did this want to be before it became, you know, orthodox or constrained? It's in old fashioned astrology school, again in London in prehistory, but we used to play a game like, let's put this chart in the army, like double the Saturn. Let's get this chart drunk, Neptune, no Saturn. Let's do that. You know, anyway, it was quirky and kind of popular style, but an interesting thing about, you know, how would things respond to different circumstance? How would people? But
I mean, yeah. I mean, the way that I approach it is, you know, understanding that everything could be on this broad spectrum of dark to bright, and I look at someone's age as a loose guide to where are they in their developmental trajectory. And that's not going to give you all the information, but, you know, if you're consulting someone who's 18 years old, they generally haven't matured and done the chart at its brighter expression yet. I like the analogy of the acorn growing into the tree. And so just because we're older doesn't mean that we're necessarily going to be more spiritually or emotionally mature either. But we hear from the client and we get a sense and we meet them where they're at and we can frame things with the available information that we have. And so I always see it as a co-creative dialogue with the client. I don't assume anyone's at any particular level. So I give latitude. I see the possibility in anything, and I also am aware of the shadow and hazards and the challenges. And I really let the client kind of inform and tell their story and hear from them, which a lot of times astrologers just talk at the client, and we don't really hear their experience. So I make a lot of room for people to show up in.
That's great, because I think we're all learning, and those of us who love astrology, I've been doing it for I don't even know, but exactly what you said, you know, sometimes I go, was I talking too much? You know, did I leave room? I always begin by saying it's another kind of storytelling, you know, for all of us, you know, may it be an offering, like, as opposed to an imposition. So feel free to stay with me, like this resonates, or no, that's not true. But what you're saying, yeah, I think it's, we're all experimenting, right, to go, ooh, maybe more, yes, and the conversing, like, how's this? What's this going on? Well, good for you. Yeah, I think that's a crucial way to go, you know. And then we'll just think of now and the humming. I mean, we are at the dark of the moon. We are at the dark of the moon. New moon on Saturday in Berkeley. It'll be at 9, or West Coast, 9:37 p.m. On June 17th. You know, on the East Coast, it will be 12:37 a.m. June 18th, which is Father's Day. I think that's interesting fun. But we love the charts there. It's the sun and the moon, new moon in Gemini. So here we are at the dark of the moon. Again, let's, you know, gather and positively conspire for what is the atmospheric mist we would like to waft forth, right? And radio is magic, you know. So on the new moon, and it's all, right, it's all moving into place, like nothing's ever something. It's always becoming, right? But we do have the sun and the moon square Neptune today, and mm-hmm. the new moon as well. And there is a lot of, well, it's like it behooves us to animate the desirable and the desirable metaphors and images, lest we leave by default to the dementors, right? So sun square Neptune is like, right, you know, give Gemini vernacular expression to deep, powerful images and the sense of oneness, you know. And Deborah Falmouth, my friend, says, in Arabic, salam, peace, is not the absence of conflict, it's the presence of oneness, right? And that's really the Neptune thing. But if we don't do that, then we can see the atmosphere is full of illusion, delusion, craziness, communication breakdowns, imaginary tapes that don't exist. All of that, right, that we want to dispel. How do you think of the Gemini Pisces dance?
Yeah, I love it. It's almost like this synthesis of left and right brain, you know, the corpus callosum. How do we bridge these hemispheres between the mercurial, curious, inquisitive little brain and this, you know, ineffable kind of non-linguistic, you know, trans-rational Neptunian kind of imagination that we're all enveloped in? How do we forge an alliance, a synthesis between those things? How can we do that translation and bridge these hemispheres seems to be part of it. But another thing going on that I find to be really beautiful, actually, with this new moon is also conjunct Juno in Gemini as well. And then we also have the North Node in Taurus and ruled by Venus in Leo. And it just really makes me feel like there's such a rejuvenation right now around love, around joy, around, you know, how are we going to have inspiration, Neptune, and bring that to human relationships? And how are we going to you know, cultivate that again, because things lately have been quite dark. And
right. Well, wait. Hold that thought, because our break music time has come. So we're going to just play this wonderful resonant. It's kind of a call and response between you and the song and between all of us in this song. So, and we'll come right back on all that you just said. We will aspire to remember it. So here we go. Break music. Tomorrow never knows. Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. That's a great theme song. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and our wonderful radio dance partner for this hour is Eric Myers, fellow astrological erudite guide, cultural guide, who has a book on many things, but also the spiritual dimension of the Beatles. Wonderful. So yeah, we're back, Eric, and that song really holds up. And what we were talking about, it really is a musical expression, reflection of a collective inner state. Again, are born earlier than you, but it's like we all just laid down and like let it wash over us. And I think even then, at the age of 14, I think we had access to cannabis, or as some of us defiantly say, marijuana. And then later, of course, the entheogens, which saved many of us from nihilism. And there's a resonance now, right, as the microdosing and the entheogens and the LSD making a resurgence and the, you know, psilocybin mushrooms, I view as, you know, not necessary for everyone, but what they represent and what they do as essential for cultural transformation. And in that way, the song is really cool.
Lennon specifically was writing about is a big part of that song, as I talk about in the book from my research, that he was trying to, you know, give voice and sound to his experience with LSD. Yeah. And, you know, it's blatantly about that as a catalyst. But he's saying you don't need it, but it gives you a taste of something broader. And then, you know, then we can, you know, find other ways to reach it as well. So there was some controversy, of course, you know, with all of that. But, yeah, it's in the way that you use it, of course. And, you know, many ways that we can get there or not. But certainly was a product of that time, and it was certainly, you know, indicative of that time, and Lennon certainly was not shy about that.
And it's making a comeback. It's like ooh, it's very now, the kind of dreaming the earth into being. And yeah, I'd say that that's a pretty good musical outward expression of inner state, that the kind that LSD and entheogens guide one to, going, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And I'd say if you Neptune don't, and Pisces certainly would be the astrology that correlates with that. And we've also seen a lot of the darker side, you know, with opiate abuse and a lot of pharmaceutical drugs as well. So there's lots of expansion, lots of hazards, but certainly Neptune and Pisces has seen a big resurgence. And, you know, we talk about Uranus and Pluto. But Neptune also is going to be shifting signs. It gets to Aries in just 2 years, and that's probably going to shift things of a Neptunian variety.
Right. And then, well, let's honor what Neptune represents in this beautiful language that allows us to speak about interior things and the connection to the external world. So Neptune dreams, vision, imagination. We draw it as a trident, and it says to all of us, what happens to a person, a family, or a culture when there is no sense of mythic participation in something that draws upon our good qualities? And then Neptune says, well, then people get hooked on Neptune's trident, get addicted to anything that numbs the pain, alcohol, substances, disappointment. again, my ally Sylvia says, we want to find our main addiction really is to suffering. And she says, she invites everybody to just monitor daily how we give ourselves our dose of suffering, not living up to other people's expectations, not living up to our own. And then she says, just start slow withdrawal. Many people lead happy, normal lives on relatively low doses of self-inflicted suffering. But yeah, so that's the kind of core of the thing, you know. And our whole chart right now, that we don't need to know astrology, or it just resonates within us, is Ceres Demeter, goddess of the earth, at 28 Virgo, one of my favorite degrees. In a cave overhung with twisted roots, a seeker pours over the glowing pages of an illuminated alchemical manuscript. And it's like, ooh, okay, that let that hum in all of us who've ever studied anything useful. Now is the time. And it's opposite Neptune, and the chart is kind of framed or contained like dreaming with and for the earth, you know, in micro and macro ways. So that's great. Yeah, and it's you know, Bill Wilson and his correspondence with Carl Jung, right? They said there's no cure for addiction without a spiritual experience. And what people don't know so much is that Bill Wilson got the vision for AA by eating psilocybin mushrooms, right? Because AA can get all precious, like, oh no, nothing, just, you know, cigarettes and coffee and sugar. It's like, no, Bill used mushrooms, you know, and that's how he got the vision of the thing. Let's be discerning what guides us into community and what takes us out of community. So, you know, what takes us out is toxic, what guides us back in is tonic. I think that's a kind of useful dynamic. But but before I interrupted you in order to go to the break music, you were speaking about the beauty also of Venus and Mars that are now together in the sky with a beautiful sextile to Mercury. We can take it from there, but I did interrupt you so that we could play the song. But what were you going to say about Venus and Mars?
Yeah, well, we were talking about this upcoming new moon, and we were speaking about Neptune square the sun in Gemini and the synthesis of left and right brain. And then I went on a little bit of a excursion about a beauty with Juno conjunct the sun and the north node in Taurus and ruled by Venus and Leo. And I was saying, I also see what's going on now as this cosmic invitation to refresh and replenish ourselves with romance, with beauty, with things that are joyous. With the south node in Scorpio for the last year and a half, things have been pretty dark and heavy. And it's about to shift to Libra next month. And I think that this current astrology is almost a preamble for that shift. It's like we collectively could be replenished now. And it's the summer, and we've got this Venus in Leo for 4 months, and the sun conjunct Juno, which does have, you know, to do with things that are more romantic and idealistic. And I just wanted to give voice to the replenishment of possibility and things that are much more aesthetic and much more inspiring, because a lot of people have just been through really dark and difficult times lately. So things are not going to just snap your fingers and just get, you know, better. But I think part of the invitation is for us to, you know, engage with life again and be optimistic.
Right. Well, there's so much backup. I mean, again, I find the guiding astrological language, we remember the word disaster means against the stars and consider means with the stars. So we gather to consider in order to avert greater disaster. But yeah, so every night, everybody, when the smoke does not obscure your view or the clouds, we get to see Venus and Mars very close together after sunset. And on the new moon, you know, just we all speak astrology, and as you were just, Mars's image is a volunteer church choir, and we go, right, everything resonating, everything singing, the crickets and the evening insects and the people. And it's right next to Venus at 11 plus Leo, which is a very undercover agent degree. Sometimes we just learn things not out of books, but everybody I know who's been an undercover agent, mostly for good, had something at 11 Libra, which is an evening lawn party lit up with lanterns inside the more traditional guests, outside the undercover agents exchange intelligence. Now we're back to Richard Farina. Take the zircon to Fapa and tell him we move tonight. So I love that kind of positive intrigue dynamic. And it has a beautiful collaborative 60-degree angle called a sextile to Mercury on the new moon, which is, again, information, spreading out information. And then just to go back, yeah, things, it's like the more language, the more words, the more metaphors we have, the more portals of participation. So for a long time, and I like this, and I put it out for people to experiment with, you know, so any dastardly thing, like we have our Saturn accountability public ritual festival, right? And the former guy's, you know, indictment, right? And so there was a lot of inciting of violence and nonsense speaking. And so backstage team, and now it's everybody who wants to play, we love putting together our atmospheric mist, right? With I do lavender and psilocybe, and we put Devil's Club in there and maybe whatever. And we waft it over Miami and go, may anything up to no good be, you know, dissolve like a wet firecracker fart. And that pretty much happened. I like it. We've done that a couple of times, and it's like play, participate. There's so many ways to experiment with how can we participate and be influential. And Neptune says, you know, metaphors are pragmatic mysticism. Metaphors are incarnational garb whereby power enters the world, as does, and Jupiter, the power of blessing. Well, and we'd gotten on to, because I said the last time that Jupiter and Uranus, the two biggest path openers, were in Taurus together was 1940, right? And then you said, that's when you go, oh, that's John Lennon, right? So there he is, 1940. But mm-hmm. I do like remembering that that's when Europe had Nazis and America had the New Deal and Nazis too. And it's almost a little bit the reverse, but But I do just want to mention again to the team, you know, in 1940, 41, you know, after the Nazis invade France, everyone pretty much thinks, including the Brits, that the Nazi invasion of Britain will succeed, just on a rational level. And so I go to the non-rational participants, the Dion Fortune, wonderful mentor auntie, being hired by the British government to work with all the ritualists of Britain to do ritual magic to protect Britain from the Nazi invasion. And it's a great book. I've been kind of translating it into modern application now. But it's like, you know, that might have really helped. That might have really done the thing. And again, we encourage all of us, because don't you think this beautiful language wants to and does make, like if you're doing a reading for somebody, make all of their skills available to them, going, here, these things, right?
Right. And can I also shift for one sec? I'm looking at this new moon chart, and I'm recalling Paul McCartney is all over this. And, you know, it's on his birthday. June 18th is McCartney's birthday. And then he's got in his chart a T-square from late Virgo, late Pisces, late Gemini, which is overlaid with this Neptune, Ceres, Sun, T-square. Then he also's got Mercury in Gemini, and he also has four planets in Leo, where the current Venus Mars is. And he's back in the news with this other kind of Beatles song that is being assisted by AI technology. And so here we see him also to circle around with the Beatles, getting this big astrological kind of amplification right now. With his chart. So here he is in the news as well. I just wanted to kind of mention that one too.
No, that's great. Yes, inviting in everybody, known or not known. And also because you use a 6:30 p.m. birth time for John Lennon, which gives 19 Aries rising, and Chiron in the sky right now is at 19 Aries. Shall we do a little homage to Chiron? I like that. You know, even when people are dead, their charts respond to transits. I'm very fond of this.
I think Carl Jung said it well. He said that the darn stuff even works after you die.
Yeah, that's great. It's like they get republished, like, the Saturn transit before the Jupiter transit. Right, first death, then republished. So, yeah, maybe Philip Dick went that way, going on his deathbed, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful ancestor, ally, science fiction writer. But he sold Blade Runner, his first thing, for some actual real money for the first time in his life. And as he was dying, he got the check, and he's like, perfect. Right. So anyway, so yes. So there are many things. So we do have this new moon chart. Same new moon. Ceres will be at 29 Virgo, having moved on, which is an emergency call. One's attention goes to matters at hand, and that has a great resonance with last week's guest, fantabulous Diana Beresford Kroger. Hi there, who has planets at 29 Virgo, and what I loved about her last week is that she's fully informed and full of encouragement. We can do this, right? From a fully informed thing, you know, it's like, yes, there's warning, there's danger. Let it be an incentive for us all to kind of jump up and live and participate in some way. And then, all right. So we can go anywhere we want, Eric.
I was going to say, I'd love to talk with our remaining moments about Pluto making this little dance between Aquarius back to Capricorn now. And
yes.
Yeah. And so one point I want to make, which you saw me comment on Facebook about this, is that young people out there, everyone on the planet who is between 11 and 28 years old right now, all of them, everyone, they either have Uranus and or Neptune or both in the sign of Aquarius. And then now Pluto making this shift to Aquarius is going to hit all of their Uranus and Neptunes over the next many years. And I was discussing that as almost like, you know, the popcorn kernels in the oil, and the heat is going to be turned up, and a lot of them are going to be popping. And we're going to be moving into this Pluto and Aquarius, I believe, this kind of stepping stone to the age of Aquarius is going to be accelerating as Pluto moves through and hits all of these young people's transpersonal planets, guaranteed, over many years. And it's a kind of this really exciting kind of image in my mind of these young people kind of popping. Because when I had Pluto hit my Neptune when I was in my early to mid-20s, that's when I went through a massive spiritual transformation myself, and which is the point, you know, Neptune spiritual and Pluto keyword transformation. I mean, that happens with something like this. And so where are we headed? That's kind of where we're headed. But right now, we've got this final kind of, you know, passage of Pluto back in Capricorn. I mentioned the empire strikes back, the resistance to change, the patriarchy or the, you know, ultra-conservative forces wanting to make their point where there's not going to be this yielding necessarily to these futuristic possibilities. We still need to address and negotiate these forces that want to control things and hold on to power. So we're at this very liminal time, this incredible transitional moment. But for the listener, where we're headed is one of the most progressive times. I mean, not only Pluto and Aquarius, but trine Uranus and Gemini gets there in 2025. And both of those planets make the sextile to Neptune in Aries. We've got this wonderful complex aspect configuration in the sky between all three outer planets, all entering new signs around the same time, which is pretty epic and unheard of. So I just wanted to kind of give voice to all of that before our time is up.
No, that's great. That's great. And yeah, because you're humming many, many useful things. Yeah, so age 11 to 28, the planet's in Aquarius, right, and soon Pluto. You know, I like Pluto on June 11th going, wait a minute, let me go back into Capricorn for America's Pluto return and the festival of the Saturn festival of accountability. Accountability is the sine qua non for democracy. Let's go back and clean this up. And as though Pluto says, you guys, you can have a democracy, or let's try one. We haven't tried that yet. But only if you look at everything, right? Deep delving, you know, it's down into the thing. So I view this as a useful, a necessary, crucial ritual, right? And then the atmospheric mist necessary to keep it safe and not disrupted. But yeah, I love, you know, your generational work, which I like a lot. And I like this idea of, you know, whole segments kind of reporting in for duty. Like, it, you know, and as astrologers, it's like in the last maybe, you know, 8, 9, 10 years. So I'm now starting to get a lot of people born in the early mid-90s coming in for readings. It's like mid-90s reporting in for duty. And I go, I remember when you were born, because it was the Neptune-Uranus conjunction in Capricorn. And I woke up with a voice in my ear from a dream I've never heard that before that said, we must learn to work with water and imagination in a revolutionary way. I'm like, okay. Alrighty. And then when I hosted Eric Shi, great Gen Z kind of activist and voice, and I didn't impose astrology on him because you never know. But I did use it though, because I go, well, who makes up the names, Gen Z, and who decides the dates, 1997 to 2012? And then let me see if there's anything. Well, in the beginning of 1997, it's the Jupiter-Neptune conjunction in Capricorn, big dreams and competence. So I ask the sort of voice, one of the voices for Gen Z, without mentioning Jupiter and Neptune, I go, do you think, you know, intelligences, generations, and do you think Gen Z, your team, for which we've been kind of waiting to participate, you know, has Jupiter, I didn't say Jupiter, big dreams and competence to make it happen? He goes, yeah, that's exactly right. So there, I love this, you know, generational dynamic. Right. And then all these different parts, these different generations kind of coming alive, right? And like not everybody was John Lennon, you know, or Paul McCartney, or moving through that field. But if we're receptive, I love a great animist writer, Terry Pratchett, saying, "Genius is always sleeting through the universe until it finds a receptive molecule, because then it's like zzz, Shakespeare, tum, or zzz, John Lennon, or fill in your name." So that idea of being receptive or a willing agent for the zeitgeist, it's like, you know, many seeds are strewn, but not all take root. Yeah. But yeah, so there's that. No, I like this idea that, yes, absolutely. You know, so let me toss it right back to you in our minute here. Because Pluto going back into Capricorn, I view that as, you know, going back to test all structures, right? All structures not based on biomimicry, on nature's guiding genius, are collapsing. Greed and incompetence, you know, condos built on sand and healthcare systems and all. And Pluto goes back in, going, let's stress all the systems. Yeah, Route 95 and on the East Coast, you know, there was a collapse of the thing, and anyway, major infrastructure collapse, you know, and I think Pluto in Capricorn says, let's look at that so that we can weave good
Well,
citizenship
it is.
embrace.
And even with Trump and, you know, even with the Supreme Court, with what's going on there, it's this collapse of our giving power away to the former, you know, institutional control of things and the people. And, you know, when I was a kid, Ronald Reagan was president, and there was just a lot of reverence, it seemed, for the presidency or the Supreme Court. They had credibility, even if you didn't agree with them. Things don't have as much credibility anymore. They're collapsing. We don't believe it anymore. And it's this empowerment for the common people of Pluto going into Aquarius. Now, how does that shift things? How are we going to reform things? That remains to be seen. But I think there's a dismantling of giving power away to those in charge. Across the board, people are just
Yeah.
don't believe it anymore.
Well, that's right. We want to insource our authority and suck the chi out of external authoritarianism. And then, just as a Mercury's image today is arouse, strikers, surround a factory, right at square Saturn. And just a little announcement to the future: June 29th, I'll be hosting Charles Allison with his book on Nestor Makhno, The Life and Times of Ukrainian Anarchist Nestor Makhno. Let's bring philosophical and practical anarchism back into play with that thing. And also coyotenetworknews.com for Tuesday's summer solstice Zoom thing. And then our wonderful guest, and we're on our way out, but is great, Eric Myers. And his website is, wait, soulvisionconsulting.com. So thank you so much, Eric Myers, and I will look for your Beatles book and many more things. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
That's great. And thanks always to Kirsten Thomas. I'm Caroline Casey. Go to coyotenetworknews.com for more fun ways to play. Woof woof.